Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you are doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and with me, as always, is a man that knows that love ain't the same on the south side of town. He is the captain.
But it's about $1.50 less. It's good to be seen, and it's good to see you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend.
Today, we got something awesome in the fridge. We are sipping on Ginger Ninja by Black Hog Brewing Company. This is a red IPA brewed with fresh ginger, lemon, and hibiscus with an ABV of 6.5%. Garage grade 4 out of 5 bottle caps. And this awesome IPA is brought to us by these garage ninjas right here. First up, cheers to Remington down in South Carolina. Remington is spreading the good word by telling everyone to be good, be kind, and don't litter.
And a big shout out to James in Margate City, New Jersey.
And here's a double cheers, Captain, going out to Tyler and Tristan in Panama City, Florida.
And back down under to Thomas in Melbourne, Australia.
Next, we have Michael and Becky in Austin, Texas. And last but certainly not least, we have Mandy sending us a cheers from Indiana. So thanks, everybody, for helping us out with this week's show. If you want to help us out with next week's show, put a little beer in that fridge, go to truecrimegarage.com and click on the donate button.
B-W-E-R-R-U-N, beer run, and that's enough of the business.
All right, everybody, gather around, grab a chair, grab a beer. Let's talk some true crime.
You know, a question that a man always has to ask himself when he goes through something like I went through. Are you in a better spot than you were before? Was it worth it? And the answer to me is yes. And the sooner man gets to leading a life of transparency, the better off he is. And you do that by making things simple. But what we do, because of sin, things get complicated. I mean, every day the devil would beat me up. Every single day the devil would beat me up and remind me of what a bad person I was. And what that does, that keeps harboring, you know, the crime and keeps burying you. And what you then, you can't be of any use to anybody.
January 1982, Santa Clara, California. A baby is born. This is Patrick James Dennehy. Patrick grew up to be tall and athletic. He played basketball on the Wilcox High School team located in Santa Clara. As a sophomore, Dennehy averaged 20 points, 14 rebounds, and 8 blocks a game. Afterward, he transferred to St. Francis High School in Mountain View. He was rated a 1999-2000 High Honorable Mention All-American by Street and Smith's magazine. This despite missing half of his senior season due to a torn ACL, an injury that required surgery. The high school star athlete then went on to play college basketball, a scholarship player at the University of New Mexico, where he was listed as a 6'9" tall backup forward. As a freshman, he played in 33 games and started 2, and was named the school's most improved player. As a sophomore in 2001-2002, Dennehy, now listed as a center, started 28 games and played in 30 in total, averaging 10.6 points, 7.5 rebounds per game, and was named All-Mountain West Conference Honorable Mention. But remember, friends, the fall is always a lot faster than the climb. Patrick Dennehy got into hot water with his coach and teammates. This is after he stormed out of a practice, leading Patrick Dennehy to be kicked off of the basketball team. But Dennehy made enough of an impact on his team and in his conference, finishing 5th in the conference in rebounds, that he's going to get another opportunity. He was offered a roster spot on the University of Baylor's basketball team, where per league rules, he would be required to sit out a year for making the transfer. Baylor, a proud Baptist university, this is where Dennehy made a religious and personal transformation. Then after sitting out for a year, Patrick Dennehy, now 21 years old, 6'10" tall, and weighing 230 pounds, was ready to play for the Baylor Bears in the upcoming 2003-2004 season. And it was looking like Baylor was ready to try to make a run at not only defeating the big dogs like Texas and Kansas, but making a run at winning the Big 12 championship. This team seemed to be full of transfers from other colleges. One of those transfers was Carlton Dotson. Dotson played for Paris Junior College in East Texas and transferred at the same time as Dennehy, but per league rules, Dotson was allowed to play immediately. Carl Dotson, in his first year playing for the Baylor Bears, played in 28 games and averaged almost 16 minutes a game. But in 2003, a new junior college transfer was making his way to Baylor. This is Harvey Thomas. Head coach Dave Bliss believed Harvey Thomas was the missing piece and informed Carl Dotson that his playing time was going to go down significantly. Dotson was going to leave the team and university and transfer again if he could find a school. In early 2003, Carl Dotson and his wife split up. Dotson goes to live with his good friend and teammate Patrick Dennehy in an apartment. At some point, Dotson answers an ad. This is for a breeder who is selling pit bull puppies. Dotson and Dennehy go to a farm to check out the pups. There, the two become friends with the property owners. This is Darren and Tammy Cox.
But hold on to your horses, because it's going to become a bumpy ride pretty quick.
Dotson and Dennehy, they go to their coaches with a complaint, and this is not your normal type of complaint.
Yeah.
They're not talking about basketball or things related to their time playing, their court time, any of that. This is more serious. This is, they are saying that $300 was stolen from their apartment and that they were being threatened by some of their other teammates. It does not appear that any action was taken regarding these complaints, but we know that these complaints took place. So these young men are going to take action into their own hands. On June 2, 2003, they tell friends that they have purchased guns to protect themselves. After the 5-day waiting period on June 7th, Dennehy and Dotson show one of their doggy friends, Darren Cox, two guns they say were purchased because they were concerned about their personal safety. They asked if they could practice shooting these guns at the farm, and permission was granted.
Yeah.
On June 11th, Dennehy's other roommate, Chris Turk, leaves for a trip. Patrick Dennehy makes a long-distance call to his girlfriend in Albuquerque. This is longtime girlfriend Jessica De La Rosa. On June 12th, Patrick Dennehy attends his final class of the year. 2 days later, Dennehy tells his friend Daniel that he is worried about threats to Carlton Dotson by two of their teammates. He also tells Daniel that both he and Dotson will meet him at a party the next day, but neither Dennehy or Dotson ever show up to this party.
So you have these roommates that go to their coach saying, hey, we've got $300 that are missing, and now we're getting these threats. Now, I'm assuming that now that they're, you know, worried about these threats that are coming from quote-unquote teammates, were these the threats that they talked about to their coach earlier?
It appears that all of this is the same, stemming from all the same story.
Right.
The next day on June 15th, Dennehy's mother and stepfather, they find it very odd that they didn't hear from Patrick Dennehy on that day. This is Father's Day.
Yeah.
And he does not call home to speak with his father. On June 16th, the other roommate, Chris Turk, and I say other roommate because remember we have Dennehy and Dotson and Chris Turk living there.
Yeah.
This Chris Turk, he returns from his out-of-state trip and finds that Dennehy's dogs have not been fed in what he says he believes to be days. Now, a few days go by, and Patrick's parents still have not heard from their son. And in fact, they are in the process of trying to track him down. They want to know why they've not heard from him. Where could he be? What's going on with this young man? Well, after talking with Patrick's friends and his girlfriend, they decide to step up the search, and they actually report Patrick Dennehy missing on June 19th, 2003.
Now, is anybody reporting Carlton missing?
No, no one is reporting Carlton missing. And this is also why I included some of the events leading up to when he's actually reported as missing. So we have the other team, the other roommate, Chris Turk, saying, hey, I left for this trip. And when I left, everything was normal. Everything was fine.
Right.
And we know that Dennehy spoke to his long distance, longtime girlfriend. And
everything was fine then.
Everything was fine. They were actually planning on when they would see each other. Remember, he had attended his last class of the year.
But he might have mentioned the threats to her. Or do we know that?
I don't know that he did. Okay. There's nothing to state that he did. But what we do know is when Chris Turk returns from his out-of-state trip, he's like, look, that's when things appeared weird to me. Everything was fine when I left. I get back, and his dogs appear to be starving.
Yeah.
They've not been fed in days. And, oh, by the way, nobody has heard from Patrick Dennehy, including his parents, who he was very close to, not calling on Father's Day, and his girlfriend that he was very close to has not heard from him since that last phone call.
Right. The dogs, maybe. I mean, you know, little Frank, he acts like he's starving all the time, even right after he just ate. So, but big red flag to go, hey, here's this guy that, you know, is getting on track to play some basketball. Seems like a good guy. Why didn't he call home Father's Day?
Mm-hmm. Well, now we have the Waco Police Department. They're involved because now we have a missing persons report that has been filed. So on June 23rd, the Waco Police Department, they file an affidavit seeking a search warrant. This is for Dennehy's computer. They want to get into that computer, see what was going on, see if they can find a trail of breadcrumbs to lead them to Patrick Dennehy.
Yeah.
Now, this next part certainly scared the hell out of Patrick's friends and family, because on June 25th, so this is 6 days after he is officially reported missing to police. On June 25th, Patrick Dennehy's Chevy Tahoe is found in a mall parking lot. Now, this is way out in Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
So not only would the 1,400 miles distance and the 21 hours of driving time scare the hell out of me, yeah. but the vehicle was also found without license plates.
Yeah, this is not good.
So somebody moved this vehicle this great distance, 1,400 miles, and tried to conceal it by removing the license plates. Police don't know how it ended up there or who moved it there or if, in fact, it could have even been Patrick himself.
Yeah.
But then just 2 days later, a statement is issued by police saying the potential suspects in this missing persons case include Patrick's teammates. In relation to this statement, amongst other aspects of this investigation, a St. Petersburg, Florida attorney who is known to represent athletes says he has been hired by one of Patrick's teammates. This is Patrick's quote-unquote friend and roommate, Carlton Dotson. The attorney says Carlton Dotson is at his home in Maryland and will not discuss the case. Well, that's interesting, right? What's yeah. pretty close to Virginia Beach? Maryland. And this poor young man has gone missing in Texas. During all of this, the authorities back in Waco, Texas, have been conducting ground and aerial searches looking for the young man. Now, most of these are conducted in large areas, some of which are large open areas, and they seem to be focusing in on three areas in particular, one of them being the Cox Farm, where
right.
So this is where they became friends with the people that were selling the puppies.
Right.
And they also got permission once they became friends with these people to shoot guns and target shoot and practice shooting these guns on their property.
Well, we got a bunch of weird stuff going on. We have these two athletic men. Well, we got three that are living together. But everything seems fine other than there was some money missing and that we have possibly some threats happening. Mm-hmm. So then these guys feel threatened enough that they're going to get guns to protect themselves. And now we have one of the basketball players' car is 1,400 miles away.
Right.
And we have his roommate, his quote-unquote friend, saying, hey, I'm not talking about this. And so July 9th, we have Dennehy's mother coming out and saying, the coaches told her that her son said he was being stalked. So I wonder if that's something he said when he said, hey, somebody took this money, we're being threatened, and I'm being stalked. I wonder if that's when he told the coaches about that.
Well, and according to ESPN, Patrick's mother said that she and her husband, they regret that their son never alerted them about his fears. Yeah. Stating that if he had, Dennehy's stepfather said, quote, I would have been on the first plane to Waco. On July 17th, Carlton Dotson has a meeting at the Dorchester County Sheriff's Office in Delaware, after which no charges are filed, and Carlton walks out of this meeting a free man. The next day, a maintenance worker at an apartment complex found and turned over to police a handgun. This is the apartment complex where Harvey Thomas, remember the new kid in town, mm-hmm. the believed to be missing piece on the Baylor basketball team, this is where he lived.
Mm.
But then in a strange and surprising twist to some, but not to all, on July 21st, Carlton Dotson is arrested in Maryland and charged with the murder of Patrick Dennehy.
Oh.
This goes down in a very weird manner. Okay, so as soon as police come out and say...
Yeah, because hold on, because we have these two friends that live together. They both go to the coaches. They're fearful enough. They say there's threats. They're fearful enough that they get guns. And now he's being arrested with the involvement of his friend's disappearance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And remember, he's in Maryland. And when the attorney for Dotson first comes out to the media and says, look, I'm representing Carlton Dotson now, he's staying in his Maryland home. He's not going back to Waco, Texas, and he's not going to be discussing this case with media at this time.
Oh.
We do know that he has this meeting with the sheriff's department. Now, he's still in his hometown. He's not back in Waco, Texas yet. The weird thing that comes out here is when they interview him and they allow him to leave, they very quickly, the sheriff's department very quickly tells the media that he didn't say anything incriminating during the course of this meeting. He didn't say anything that led us to believe that or would give us more suspicion than we currently have.
Right.
Even though he's all these many miles away in the vehicle, Patrick Dennehy's Chevy Tahoe is found a lot closer to Carlton Dotson than where Pat went missing from.
Yeah, yeah.
The arrest becomes, it takes place because apparently Carlton Dotson called 911 the dispatcher.
Okay.
Dotson said he had an emergency and requested that the police be told where he was and how to find him. Now, some of what Dotson said to police has not been made public because it pertains to his mental condition, so protected information according to state law.
Uh-huh.
But what we learn is this. He says he was hearing voices and that he was afraid for his life. Dotson told police that people want to kill him because he is Jesus, the Son of God.
What?
Yeah. If he's Jesus, the Son of God, people want to kill him.
Okay.
He said he was from a family of prophets and that he could see who was going to heaven.
Okay. So this is a new skill above his basketball skills.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
So this is a strange turn of events, to say the least.
You think?
Right.
But okay, can I just point out the obvious?
Mm-hmm.
Waco. This is not the first person from Waco that
has claimed to be a prophet.
Yeah. What is in that water?
Right. That's a good
question.
Don't
drink the water in Waco.
On the next episode, we will be sampling water from Waco, Texas.
No.
So this gets a little more involved, especially on Carlton Dotson's part.
Okay.
So he's essentially, I guess, turning himself in, and I'm sure that it's not quite clear to police what he's turning himself in for, other than the fact that he's saying, hey, I'm afraid. People are going to kill me.
Yeah.
So they get this guy to the police department. And they tell him, hey, you're safe here. You need to tell us everything that's going on with you so we can protect you or what have you. And this is when they're realizing our suspicions were correct. This Carl Dotson guy probably was involved with something that happened to Patrick Dennehy, or he's aware of it.
Right.
To which Carl Dotson never really denies killing Patrick Dennehy. In fact, he goes on to say that he did kill Patrick Dennehy, but this was in self-defense. This was his argument was going to be a self-defense argument. He says that at some point when they went out to target shoot and to practice shooting these guns, that Patrick Dennehy pointed a gun at Dotson.
Mm-hmm.
And he even pulled the trigger. And Dotson says that the gun either misfired or didn't fire at all, whatever happened.
Right.
To which Carl Dotson responds by shooting Patrick twice. We have this individual in custody. He's not denying murdering Patrick Dennehy, but he's already putting together a self-defense argument for whatever took place. And then on top of that, he's got some questionable things going on inside his head.
Right. So he believes that he's Jesus. He also believes that he's from a family of prophets. He also can tell whether or not people can go to heaven or hell, and he is feeling threatened. At some point, though, he's feeling threatened. I'm trying to back it up a little bit because they're roommates. Is it possible that he is hearing this stuff in his head and he starts feeling that he's threatened? And so therefore, therefore Dennehy starts filling that, or is he just going based off of what his roommate says? I mean, because if you live with somebody and you come home and they go, a couple people called us and they're threatening us, and you don't know your roommate to be, he's not telling you that he's Jesus. He's not telling you he's a prophet. Do you just believe that? You see what I'm saying? I maybe I'm reading too much into it, but we have two individuals that go to coaches and say, hey, we feel threatened. Two individuals that buy guns. Was it just this, it almost seems like a schizophrenia thing happening with Dotson. Is he taking that and making Dennehy believe him without actual evidence?
I think you're really onto something here, because some things that we got to factor in here as well. Patrick Dennehy was not at Baylor University for a very long period of time.
Yeah.
I mean, he transferred there. He sat out a year. These two individuals did not live together for that the entirety of that time. We have Dotson, who was married. He was living elsewhere. It wasn't until his marriage fell apart that he ends up shacking up with Patrick Dennehy and this other guy, Chris Turk. You really have to question, how well did Patrick Dennehy, in fact, know Carlton Dotson?
Right.
They, before this, what is now believed to be a murder, they only lived together a handful of months before this all went down. And it gets very confusing here, because I think you've really hit the nail on the head, where you wonder if the perceived threat by Patrick Dennehy, is it just because it's the spillover factor from being roommates with this guy?
Right.
Because in the early reports, it states something to the effect that, well, we have Patrick Dennehy, we have the other roommate, who says, he comes out and says, Patrick Dennehy was concerned about threats that Carlton Dotson was receiving.
Right.
Is this, and then is this Carlton Dotson later saying, no, they're threatening you too. They're threatening all of us that live here.
Right, right. You're in on this now.
Somebody broke into
here.
Our home and stole money. We're right. Not safe here.
Hide your children, hide your wife, hide your husband too.
And like you said, they did go to police. Whatever was going on at this time, whether it be real or something manufactured by Carlton Dotson, or something that Carlton Dotson believed to be real, we know that Patrick Dennehy believed this enough that he went with Dotson to the coaches to report this. On July 26th, so this is just 5 days after Carlton Dotson is arrested, police announced that they have found a badly decomposed body in one of the areas provided to them by Carl Dotson. The medical examiner's office would later identify the body as Patrick Dennehy. And early reports state that he died from gunshot wounds to the head. Patrick Dennehy's funeral service is held in his home state of California. About 300 people were in attendance at this beautiful ceremony at Jubilee Christian Church Center, not far from his parents' home. This was a celebration of Patrick's life, much more so than to mourn his death. The space was filled with friends, family, teammates, and of course, his longtime girlfriend. MC Hammer was present and gave a speech and told some stories.
I live by routines, especially my same-day delivery routine with Shipt. Because when Sunday rolls around, I'm not scared. I got my shopper on the way with all my favorites. Shipt, delight in every delivery. Learn more at Shipt.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
For over 130 years, McCormick has helped you make mom's lasagna to keep her secret recipe alive. Take over taco night. No matter how chaotic your day is, conquer the bake sale, even if you get to it last minute. And craft the perfect Sunday brunch when it's not even Sunday. Because with McCormick by your side, it's gonna be great.
On this episode of Plant Killers, we'll explore one nation's most notorious fruit and vegetable killer, bad dirt. What makes bad dirt so bad? The answer? The ingredients. But fear not, true crime enthusiasts. This story has a happy ending. New Miracle-Gro Organic raised bed and garden soil. It's made with quality organic ingredients from upcycled green waste like compost and aged bark. Unlike the other guys who can't say the same. Looks like bad dirt's murdering days are over, thanks to Miracle-Gro. Join us next time on Plant Killers.
All right. Cheers, mates. We are back.
Cheers to you, Captain.
Now, question for you. This Carlton Dotson, did he also create the Yeezys?
I don't know what that is.
Because, you know, Kanye West thinks he's a prophet, and he created the Yeezys. It's a shoe.
Well, there are a lot of complications with this week's case study and regarding just the case itself. So the murder of young Patrick Dennehy, a basketball player at the University of Baylor, and the murder charges brought forward by the state against another Baylor basketball player, or former basketball player, whatever you want to call him.
Yeah.
This opened up a can of worms. And you know when you go to like somewhere like Costco or GFS and they have those giant canned goods?
Yeah.
I would say this opened up a giant can of worms for the Baylor basketball program.
Costco size.
Yeah. So it turns out that the Baylor basketball program, well, specifically the head coach, Dave Bliss, had violated several NCAA rules and regulations. Several players were receiving improper benefits, and this was Coach Bliss's doing. One of these players was, in fact, Patrick Dennehy. Now, I'm just going to refer to him as Dave Bliss from now on because, in my opinion, he does not deserve to be called coach or deserve the title of a coach. A coach is someone who should be a leader and should be a teacher. And he was working with young adults. And in fact, this guy is so disgusting. He's a complete weasel of a man that in order to cover up some of his own misdealings,
yeah,
he had a plan. And his plan was to blame a lot of this on the murder victim, Patrick Dennehy. And we know this to be true because of a very good man that was in this case. And this is assistant coach Rouse. So the assistant coach, one of many, he is in these meetings with Dave Bliss. And he's like, wait, my boss, a lot of this stuff is not adding up what he's saying to us in these meetings.
Right.
This dude does not seem to be on the up and up. And this coach, this assistant coach, is learning of misdealings that he was unaware of. It wasn't like that from the top to the bottom, everybody knew what was going on. And in fact, Coach Rouse, what he gets this great idea. He's like, you know what? This guy, Dave Bliss, is a terrible person. And I'm not going to go down with this guy. So he starts bringing a tape recorder to these meetings. And
Hold on. He comes up with this idea all on his own.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so,
good for him.
So during one of these tape recorded conversations between Dave Bliss and assistant coach Rouse, well, you can clearly hear Dave Bliss stating a couple things that they needed. There were some tracks that they needed to cover. And specifically, this was $2,000 that was made as a down payment on the Chevy Tahoe that Patrick Dennehy was driving at the time of his murder. Mm-hmm. The other thing that they needed to clear up was $7,000 in paid tuition, paid for Patrick Dennehy's tuition. So we got a couple problems here. You can't get a vehicle from your coach. You can't get a vehicle from your basketball program. And remember, Patrick Dennehy was not on scholarship at Baylor.
Well, he was.
But it appears that some of his or all of his tuition was being taken care of.
He was under the table scholarship.
So what Dave Bliss is saying in this recorded conversation, he said, look, we can blame all of this on Patrick Dennehy because he's dead. He can't say anything. He can't have a defense for this. He can't tell them what actually was going on. So let's come up with an idea of how we can cover up this $2,000 for the vehicle and $7,000 for the tuition.
So you're going to try to take this dead man and try to make some scandal that he stole money somehow?
No. Bliss wants to say that Patrick Dennehy was a drug dealer and that he paid for the vehicle and for his tuition with drug deals.
Oh.
But we know that not to be true because we know this was manufactured by Dave Bliss. So,
man, what a scumbag.
Right.
You know, like, this is a kid that you're supposed to be mentoring. This is a kid that you're supposed to. And look, I understand he wasn't there a long time. It wasn't like you had this long relationship with him. But because you're crooked, you know.
Well, he used these offers to entice Dennehy to go to school there and play for the basketball team.
Yeah.
And I get it. You know, there's somebody out there listening right now that's going, well, Patrick Dennehy accepted that misdoing.
Yeah.
And
he was in the wrong for that too.
I get that.
There's rules and regulations and Patrick Dennehy was breaking those rules and regulations.
But to the point where Dave Bliss elevates himself to a whole new level of loser is when he's like, oh, I did this stuff wrong. This guy's not around to say anything differently because he's been murdered. And, oh, we'll just make up the story that he's a drug dealer and that's how he got the money.
Right, which also then puts some cloud around his death. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like if you go, well, Patrick Dennehy, he was involved in all this other stuff. So, okay, well, you know, we don't know exactly what Carlton is telling us if it's true or not. But you know, it was drug related. So no big deal. I mean, this coach is.
He's not a coach. He's a
loser. Yeah, he should stop.
So
sorry.
Some form of justice will prevail here regarding this stuff with Dave Bliss, because on August 8th, 2003, Dave Bliss and the Baylor athletic director, Tom Stanton, both resigned. Dave Bliss was forced to resign amidst allegations that he had violated NCAA rules by making financial payments to four players and that he made improper statements to the media characterizing Patrick Dennehy as a drug dealer. The school placed itself on probation, limited itself to 7 scholarships for 2 years, and imposed a postseason ban for 1 year. Additionally, the NCAA further punished the team by initiating a non-conference ban for the 2005-2006 season and extending the probationary period during which the school would have limited recruiting privileges.
Yeah, but these guys resign and they just move on to other dirty games.
Yeah, Dave Bliss is coaching elsewhere. He's taken a significant step back in his career, let's say, but unfortunately, and this is not just America, this is most of society, we live in a society where a lot of people, or at least some, because there's evidence of such, some people are willing to turn a blind eye to very bad behavior and choose winning over character. And it's just despicable. So we won't discuss Dave Bliss, where he is now or what he's up to, but
his new name is Turd Ferguson.
But for those of you that didn't know the story behind the story, you now know who Dave Bliss is.
What a bag of,
but our story's far from done here.
Okay.
So this is in October. Carlton Dodson was declared incompetent to stand trial, this by a district judge, and he was sent to a state mental hospital to be evaluated. And this evaluation, the judge was going to allow for 4 months of evaluation. 3 psychiatrists, including one appointed by the court, said that Dodson appeared to be suffering from hallucinations and psychosis, but that he could regain competency to stand trial in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in February of 2005, Dotson was returned to jail after psychologists deemed him competent to stand trial, but that he must continue taking his antipsychotic medication. The psychologist also said that Dotson's accounts of hallucinations and hearing voices were, quote, suspect. Prosecutors and Dotson's defense team tried. This part of the story is, I don't ever remember us reporting this in any other case. Okay. Prosecutors and Dotson's defense team tried to work out a plea agreement, but could not agree on the terms of that agreement. So they're working on a possible plea agreement. They can't agree on the terms. I think that the thing that was really in question, what they were battling on, was the length of time that he would have to serve. Anyway, no agreement is reached. But then on June 8th, 2005, just 5 days before Dotson's trial for murder was to begin, Dotson unexpectedly pled guilty to killing Patrick Dennehy. And to be perfectly clear, this is without a deal. Carlton Dotson was sentenced to 35 years in prison, and he will be eligible for parole in 2021. So yeah. This is a case that I like to file under the solved but unresolved category for many reasons. You seem to have the answer to what went down and somewhat how it went down, but then you're left with all these extra questions. You know, like, was Carlton Dotson actually competent or incompetent? Did he know what he was doing? And this whole self-defense or versus murder claim, that's because this thing never went to trial. Those are the answers that we do not have. And we don't get to have them. We really can only just sit back and examine this thing and form our own opinions and conclusions.
Yeah, and this whole thing is weird. I mean, go back to David Bliss or AKA Turd Ferguson. The thing is we don't know if these claims or these threats were real. So we don't even know if both people went to these coaches, unless we have assistant coaches coming forward.
Yeah, there were, it sounds to me, according to Patrick's mother's statement, that multiple coaches said that there was something going on, that there was complaints or that he was being stalked. So it wasn't just Dave Bliss manufacturing this. It sounds to me like multiple coaches were talked to by these basketball players.
Yeah, but again, we don't know.
But we don't know if those are even real in the sense
Right. But what I'm saying is, let's say you have a problem, and I don't know what it is, and I'm not trying to take a giant leap here, but just roll with me for a second. You got a problem. You have some shady stuff going on in your program, and you have this guy that you might think is going to be the chink in the armor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is Patrick Dennehy, right? And for whatever reason, then you tell his roommate, hey, we got these threats coming, and then you got this money missing, blah, blah, blah. You're going to get these guns, then you're going to practice shooting them. You're going to kill him when you're out there. You kill him when you're out there, you'll start saying that you heard voices, blah, blah, blah. And the reason why I say that's all that stuff seems so made up is you have a third person that lived with them that didn't make any of these claims beforehand. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't say that his roommate seemed off, that Carlton seemed off, that Carlton seemed like that he was, you know, hearing voices. Doesn't say any of that. So just all of a sudden, magically, roommate goes away, and all of a sudden he thinks he's Jesus, thinks he's from a family of prophets, and then kills his roommate. It's just, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, of course it doesn't.
And then on top of that, you got somebody that they're saying is competent to fit trial or to stay in trial as long as he's medicated, but that's even questionable. And then all of a sudden they can't come up with a deal, so there is no deal, so I'll just plead guilty. A lot of this doesn't make any sense. Like, we're missing pieces of the story.
Right, and that's why I point out that because this thing didn't go to trial, that leaves some of these questions as just unanswered. They're open-ended questions that are unanswered. So, a couple things here. It's difficult in any of these situations when it's tough to form an opinion, and sometimes I don't even think that I should, because I'm not the right guy, not the right person for the job. I can't tell you. I'm not educated enough or even have sat down face to face with Carlton Dotson to give you an opinion on his mental state. It would be foolish for me to do so. So in that situation, you just go, you know what? I'm going to leave it to the powers that be, to people, to more interested parties that are better equipped to handle this type of thing. The problem is they come out with two different answers, in my opinion. Yes, he's competent in the end after 4 months. He's competent to stand trial as long as he keeps taking this medication.
Yeah.
So that doesn't really give you a clear understanding if in fact he believed, if he was hallucinating and believed these threats, or if he manufactured them to put Patrick Dennehy in a position of vulnerability.
Yeah.
Because you.
But why? What was his motivation?
Well, he's a loser.
But I don't even know if it's that simple, and that's what's creepy to me. I don't know if it's that simple. Maybe it is.
No,
but I'm just saying that there's a whole university involved in this, and there's coaches and there's higher beings.
Yeah, that, but I don't feel like the coaches had anything to do with the murder of Patrick Dennehy. What I'm getting at, and I know that I shouldn't just say it so simple as he's a loser. That is just the introduction for my argument. Okay, we have Carlton Dotson who is leaving the team. He's not going to be playing on the team anymore. He's just lost his wife. He doesn't have anywhere to live. He doesn't have a job. He doesn't have a team to play for. And who's his buddy? The kid that in his eyes probably has it all. He's on the team. He's getting improper benefits to be on the team. He's got a girlfriend. He's got everything going for him that Carlton does not have going for him. And could Carlton have manufactured a reason to, one, let's get some guns, two, let's put this guy in a place of vulnerability where we are out in the open by ourselves, and maybe Patrick Dennehy's even walking around with a gun that he purchased himself? Because here's the thing. If this whole case didn't fall apart very quickly on Carlton Dotson, you have to wonder if they would have found Patrick Dennehy a year or 18 months or 2 years later out in this very remote location, and he's out there with a gun, do they go, well, maybe he killed himself.
Right.
Maybe he shot himself in the head. Now, where it gets to be difficult, and I think where Carlton Dotson got scared and realized that whole plan that I tried to set into motion is not going to work because I had to do a double tap. I had to shoot the guy twice. And then on top of that, according to the LA Times, Patrick James Dennehy II was shot twice in the head and did not have alcohol in his system. And another source states no drugs were found in his system either. The LA Times goes on to say both gunshot wounds were above the right ear. The first bullet exited Dennehy's forehead above the left eye. The second exited behind the left ear. According to the autopsy by the Southwestern Institute of Forensic Sciences in Dallas, the report does not say how long Dennehy had been dead, but he was missing for about 6 weeks when his body was found on July 25th in a field near a rock quarry 4 miles south of the Baylor campus. So I can't, without this thing going to trial and having somebody that's better educated to tell us and explain all of this to us, what I can say here is I don't know that the wounds match up perfectly with Dotson's story.
Right.
Of he was aiming a gun at me, and whether he was joking around or whatever, and it misfired or it didn't fire or whatever, and then I shot him twice. This almost looks like somebody came up behind him, stuck the gun to the side of his head, or this was some kind of execution style murder.
Yeah, or
which would never fall into place with the self-defense argument that he's posing. And that's where it makes you wonder if he just at the last minute went, I'm a real shitbag. I don't want this thing to go to trial because then all these other things are going to come out. All the details of the story are going to be filled in. And at least if I go and plead guilty this way, I have a system, I have a setup where it's I had a defense, where I was losing it a bit. I was hallucinating. I didn't really know what was going on. And then on top of that, he pointed a gun at me and I fired. There's even times when he's been in prison and he's been interviewed and he said to the person interviewing him, well, what would you do? The guy was pointing a gun at me.
Right.
What would you do? And I just wonder with the strange way of they were in talks to try to come to some kind of plea agreement. It was never going to be that Carlton Dotson wasn't going to be guilty of this murder. But what was going to happen if this thing went to trial, again, the details, the blanks, all that could have been filled in, the story could have been completed, and we might have had a better picture if, in fact, Carlton Dotson was, in fact, competent or incompetent, or if the self-defense argument is even an argument at all.
Yeah, it's very strange. I mean, on one aspect, you want to go, okay, he drank too much of the Waco water. He thought he was Jesus. He hallucinated. Even if it's not self-defense, even if he just hallucinated that, well, then that makes the story somewhat make sense. And then you just, okay, call it a day. And the thing that came out was that they were paying Patrick under the table, and probably paying some other players under the table, and they got caught, so the coach had to resign. And then he moves on with his life. That's one thing, but because the evidence doesn't match up with his story, and we don't know because there's multiple reports on, you know, he's competent, he's not competent, you know, was he hearing voices? We don't know. You just wonder if there's something bigger here.
Well,
was the threats a setup in order to get the guns, in order to get them to be alone, so then they could? It just seems like we're missing some of the story, and we'll probably always will be missing it, because I think Carlton's going to sit there in prison and just rest on this idea. I was hallucinating. I was hearing things. He threatened me. That's in the story.
Well, and there's people out there still to this day that question, could more than one person have been involved in the murder of Patrick Dennehy? And no, it doesn't seem to me that anybody questions that Carlton Dotson was involved, or that that Carlton Dotson should be in prison for this murder. Nobody seems to be questioning that. It's everybody feels like we just don't have the whole complete story. And we did mention that little story of a maintenance worker finding a gun in the apartment complex of another teammate. And so these things are just, unfortunately, it has to fall into that solved but unresolved compartment there. Because I don't think, I mean, we're 2 years away from Dotson's being eligible for parole. We're not going to get the answers to these questions. This is how they are going to remain.
We want to thank everybody for listening, and thanks for telling a friend. Do we have any recommended reading for this week?
Why, yes, we do, Captain. This week we are recommending Under the Bridge by Rebecca Godfrey. This is a true story of a horrific murder. It's a must-read book. You'll want to go to our website. We have all of the recommended reading there for you on the recommended page. And while you're there, check out Stitcher Premium. We have another show called Off the Record. You can sign up right now on Stitcher Premium for a free month. And they have like 21,000 hours of premium podcast available on there. So it's not just us. Check out our other show, Off the Record.
But what's cool is we have over 60 episodes. So if you're wondering, like, hey, I'm all caught up on True Crime Garage, the main show, what else can I listen to? Check out Off the Record.
And until next week, everybody out there, please be good, be kind, and don't litter.
They say plants like music.
Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.